everyone. Thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Amanda Vinicky. The CTA's conundrum, regaining riders when passengers don't feel safe.
To make sure no one does not return home as they use public transportation.
Fear stoked by the killing of four passengers sleeping on the Blue Line. This as the CTA rolls out new gun detection technology and as a federal judge sides with passengers seeking to carry guns on trains for self-protection.
You have rights as a result of the Second Amendment, but there are limitations to that.
The nation, meanwhile, reeling from another school shooting, this time in Georgia.
Of those that are deceased, two were students and two were teachers here at the school.
Gun control likely to be part of the presidential debate as nominees Kamala Harris and Donald Trump are set to face off next week. Harris has the support of GOP defectors like Dick Cheney. And Trump's going in with a win. He's still a felon, convicted of paying hush money, but a judge will hold off sentencing him until after the election. Former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan has also been in court, setting parameters for his upcoming corruption trial. And the city seeks to eliminate food deserts. But is it getting a rotten banana?
Now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Brandon Pope from WCIU, Monica Eng of Axios, Mariah Rush from the Chicago Sun-Times, and Ray Long from the Chicago Tribune. I'm going to begin with you, Brandon. No, four people shot in cold blood while on the CTA. You have both anti-violence as well as commuter advocates alike calling for increased security measures. What can be done?
That's the big question right now. We're seeing a real zeroing in on a lot of issues with CTA, especially violence concerns for riders. WBEZ did a great investigation where they found that in 2024, more violent incidents than at any point since 2011. That's alarming for anybody, but especially those who are most vulnerable, and that's the homeless. And so lots of questions about, do we need more police? Maybe not, but is there a way you can have like an actual like maybe transit ambassador or someone that can be on the trains to actually monitor situations, help people, and get assistance to people who need it? We got to find some solutions here.
Monica, so yeah, it's not just security, and maybe we'll get back to that in a minute, but really calling attention to the issue of the unhoused.
That's right, and I was listening to a report by Chip Mitchell on the way over where he said that actually we've seen a tripling of violent crime in the last decade on the CTA on a per capita basis. A lot of that, though, is because of plunging ridership. And that plunging ridership doesn't just raise the per capita violence rate, but it makes it less safe. They say when there are more people on the train, you're safer. So they have a lot of high hopes.
People aren't going to attack if you perhaps have a big crowd.
Exactly. And so they think that this idea of ambassadors, as you were saying, the CTA ambassadors could be something that's a non-police solution.
But it's also like a conundrum because it's like, okay, you don't have people riding because they don't feel safe, but
they don't feel safe, so they'll stop riding.
Yeah, just it's a constant.
It's one of those where I think there's a lot in the sort of in just the discussion among Chicagoans about this, and then you have some people that push back and say, "Hey, wait, it is safe." But now that we've got numbers again, WBEZ did this reporting. CTA says that it has actually security folks that have been hired to walk on the trains, and they have something like 30,000 surveillance cameras. And now they are trying this new AI system. It detects when someone brandishes a gun. Now, Mariah, how does that square at all with now the city soon doing away with other technology that detects gunshots? And I'm talking about, of course, ShotSpotter.
Yeah, and it doesn't really make much sense, but another thing in the WBEZ piece was that they actually saw that the number of police that are stationed at the stops went down instead of going up, and they weren't allocating that resources to the train stations, even though the crime is shot up by so much.
So ambassadors, more police. Any thoughts, Ray, on the notion of additional surveillance cameras? Is there a danger of getting into a surveillance state? Or when you have a whole lot of cars and you can't have an officer on all of them, and some people wouldn't want that anyway.
Right. Well, there's always the idea of Big Brother that could get people worked up. But I think one thing we have to face here is that we need people to be safe. And I think that until we get to the point where people feel safe to go on the train and get on the bus whenever they want to and not worry about some crazy person coming up or just feeling unsafe overall, then you've got to see how far we can push this kind of technology.
Right. Is this something that, I don't know, in your either circle of friends or folks that you talk to in your reporting, do you hear from them that they're scared to hop on a train or a bus?
Yeah, and it really is, like Brandon said, it's kind of like a catch-22 situation where we want everyone to feel more safe, but we don't want to put ourselves out there to be the ones to actually be out there and have something potentially happen to us. So it's either, you know, take an Uber, which sometimes still there's issues, there's crime issues there, or you risk it on the Red Line, and who knows what's going to happen on there.
Monica, I should say I take the Red Line several times a week. I took it a few times today, and I did think about it as I was getting on the train. But, you know, we ran a story this week talking to homeless advocates, and they just said, you know, please don't conflate people sleeping on the train with crime. Mm. You know, they're just as vulnerable to those with guns as the rest of us. And, you know, we asked, well, what should you do if you encounter someone? And they said, please make eye contact with them. Let them know you heard their request. Don't treat them like nobody.
That's some salient advice, because it is something that you often encounter, I think. I also ride the train system frequently. Now, all of this, of course, comes and puts CTA President Dorval Carter, I was going to say, under the microscope again, but I'm not sure the microscope was ever lifted. Was it, Brandon? No. What do we hear from him?
We heard that he touted the security systems, he touted the cameras, but this was, I was talking about Ray earlier, one of the first times we've actually heard from him. He doesn't really do interviews. He had been evading any sort of accountability with a litany of issues happening with CTA. We saw this Block Club report coming out from Manny Ramos where Dorval Carter has taken a lot of extravagant trips, a lot of out-of-town trips. While the CTA's problems are mounting, he's not really doing visits to different CTA stops to see these issues on the ground. And it's raising concerns as riders are not happy right now.
Can count on less than two. I mean, I think it was 9 visits to CTA stations.
Meanwhile, what, is it 28 trips?
What, 28% of the time he was out of town over those 345 days.
Yeah, yeah.
So how long can Mayor Brandon Johnson stand by him, right?
I just don't know why they've got this connection that keeps him in office. You got to put the hammer down at some point. But we need to see solutions. You need to see solutions at times other than when the DNC comes in town and you finally see a clean seat on your bus. So he and others need to be out there looking out for the interests of consumers, and we just don't feel like that's happening.
I should say that I took the Green Line on the first day of the DNC, and there was 25 minutes till the next train. So I tweeted, "Oh, really nice job! You know, on the first day of the DNC, 25 minutes till the next train."
When this is, by the way, in case folks don't know, that is super close proximity to the United Center when you wanted delegates to be cruising the station.
So then I go and I cover the protest, and during the protest, I see an unknown number on my phone. Hello, hi, this is the CTA. We saw that you tweeted a complaint about the line. What was that? I'm like, well, it says right on there. So they are sensitive and they are watching.
Paying attention.
Yeah. It's interesting because I asked Mayor Johnson directly, like, how do you measure success in your leaders? And if you measure it the way you say, how does Dorval Carter actually stand to that? And his response is that Dorval Carter is meeting the metrics. Dorval Carter's response is,
did he explain what metrics?
Which ones?
Exactly. Well, comparing pre-pandemic ridership numbers to what's happening now, those have gone up. Frequency has gone up. Things haven't been solved completely, but the Carter camp's response is things are getting better. The issue is there was so much delay in trying to make them better, and there's still issues like 28-minute delays. I'm a CTA rider myself. Yeah. I've had numerous ghost trains and buses where you can't really rely on it anymore. And for a city like Chicago, number 3 market in the country, it's not right. You go to D.C., you don't have that problem.
Right.
Go to New York, you don't have that problem. Chicago, we shouldn't have to have that problem either.
Presenting issues for workers trying to get to their shifts.
Yeah.
It's really cold in the winter. That's what I'm not looking forward to, waiting for a ghost train when it's snowing. Meanwhile, we do have a ruling from a federal judge in Rockford that it is unconstitutional to prohibit Illinois residents who have concealed carry licenses to carry their guns on public transportation. Mariah, what's the impact of that?
I mean, I think that it's difficult because if you think to yourself, like, we don't want guns on the train in general, we don't want
shootings.
as is the law, and we don't want shootings, and we don't want the terrible things that happened this past week, then, I mean, you would think, oh, well, then we don't want guns at all there on the train. But people think to themselves, if I want to protect myself against someone else who might be breaking the law, then maybe I need to have mine there too. But it's, they aren't working, they aren't matching.
The thinking from the plaintiffs in this case, who I believe it doesn't mean that guns can be carried lawfully right now. The ruling limited to those four individuals who say they want guns for self-protection. But Ray, before we move on, just anything that we can see in terms of a lasting impact of this, the governor and attorney general expecting to appeal. But
right.
Does the Supreme Court factor in?
Yes, it does factor in, because if it goes up to the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court's been making, if you will, pro-gun type of decisions here. And now we've got another case down in southern Illinois, Amanda, that they're talking about having arguments over the constitutionality of the state's ban on these assault weapons, too. So that's coming up in the next few days, and you just have to ask yourself, didn't we stop this? Where does it stop? We stopped machine guns from being carried. Why can't we just draw a line here at some point?
Well, in the Illinois law that you're speaking of bans so-called assault-style weapons, including mm-hmm. the AR-15 that allegedly was used by a 14-year-old to kill four individuals at a school in Georgia. Now, Monica, is this shooting going to be the one that changes anything, particularly, of course, as it's coming in the midst of campaign season? Are we going to hear about gun issues?
Well, we always think this is going to be the one that changes things, and unfortunately, that's not what happens. In fact, presidential candidate J.D. Vance today said, this is our new reality, and this is the reality we have. Former Chicago Tribune columnist Rex Hupke wrote in USA Today, really, this is not a reality I want to accept. And so it's you know, you're going to see the same, you know, President Biden got on TV, said we must do something, and then you're probably going to see the same pushback from Republicans on it.
Same old, same old. Anybody think that this is going to change things?
Well, I don't know if it'll change things, but I do think that it's a topic that it ought to come up in the Trump-Harris debate.
Mm-hmm. I think I lost hope of things changing when we had Sandy Hook. And
right.
Once people didn't want to take action when little kids are getting gunned down, right. From there, we're never yeah. really going to see any tangible. And the ball hasn't moved forward. And so you're right. It should come up at the debate. And Trump especially, who represents the NRA and other interest groups, should have to answer directly for what are you going to do to make our community safer, other than just say thoughts and prayers when
yeah,
these things
yeah.
happen.
Or reality.
Yeah. When you're seeing a pushback on the state level, on this liberal state level, how are we going to get progress on a national level?
Mm-hmm.
What else are you expecting out of the debate, Mariah?
I'm excited to see what this microphone situation is going to be like, cutting the mics.
Yeah.
Because I know Biden's campaign did a big push to have that enacted for the last debate, which didn't go very well for him, but...
to say the least.
I guess, if you must. But for Kamala, for Harris, it might not work in her favor. I think the hope is that Trump will go off on one of his tangents and everyone will hear, kind of like what he did, what we saw at NABJ, and kind of put his foot in his mouth. But if the microphone has to be cut off, then people might not be able to hear his interesting tidbits.
We know he's definitely going to hit Kamala Harris on the economy, and she's going to have to hit back. You know, their campaign, the Walls and Harris campaign, has been all about joy so far, but the reality is there's a segment of the country, they don't feel joy at all. They go right. to the grocery store, see the carton of eggs is $6. I don't find joy in that either. So I expect to hear from Kamala Harris, what are you going to do on the economic front? Because while we do see issues like gun rights, abortion, those are important issues for a lot of people and galvanize people, it's the economy, those kitchen table issues that are really going to be, I think, driving people, especially to the polls. And let's be honest here, there's been people unhappy with the Biden administration on their policies, blaming them for inflation and rising costs, rightly or wrongly, and so she's going to have to answer for that.
I think she's going to get personal at some point, mm-hmm. too, where I think she's going to she's going to play maybe the weird card that the Democrats have been playing on the Republicans.
And the felon card, yeah.
And she has used some pretty good lines like, I know his type. Mm-hmm. And that's really something I think that resonates without having to say too much else.
Well, what does it mean for former President Trump that now his hush money trial is going to have sentencing delayed until after the election? Is this in his favor, Monica?
Well, I think there are pros and cons. A lot of people were saying that a sentencing could galvanize his people. You know, every time he was getting these guilty verdicts, his numbers went up. And it can also take a little wind out of the sails of those who say the justice system is stacked against our guy and he is a martyr. Well, he's not going to be sentenced beforehand, and this was the Biden Justice Department that decided. Let's make it clear, Biden does not control that judge. But, you know, this judge, who was seen as so biased against Donald Trump, has decided, you know what, we don't want to mess with the election. We're not going to sentence him beforehand.
So much going on in this campaign. There's also been, prosecution going forward with Russian propaganda getting involved.
Tim Pool, Chicago High School dropout, was an influencer who unwittingly, he said, took money from the Russians to promote anti-Biden propaganda.
And then just briefly, Brandon, what about now? You have we've had some Republicans. There's a Republicans for Harris group, but now. Mm-hmm. Dick Cheney, of all people, according to his daughter Liz Cheney, a former Republican congresswoman, also says they're not just going to be anti-Trump, but there will be voting for Harris. What does that mean?
Yeah, the Dems call themselves a big tent.
It's pretty big.
I think what this says is that this reflects the state of the Republican Party nationally right now, because the reality is there are conservatives in this country and independents who feel like they don't have a home anymore. They don't align with Trumpism, the Make America Great Again movement, the extremism they're seeing. And so the hope is that you're seeing this kind of push into making the Democratic ticket more center-left. Is it going to work, ultimately? I think that's a big question going forward. And also, do you alienate the progressive base you've built and younger voters by embracing
as this is an ever-tightening race. But I want to bring it back to local politics here because the Tribune has been investigating how and why corruption is so the part of the psyche of Illinois politics. Ray, what did you find? You do write that there are convictions prove that Illinois is more corrupt, but why?
Well, I think it's a long time attitude. I think it goes back to even simple things from day to day where people want to tell their kids, hey, you know, if you get stopped by a cop, wrap your driver's license in a $20 bill. That happened a lot more than you would think, but it doesn't happen probably as much as it used to. But still, there's that attitude, and this attitude just continues, and people think, well, I can do a little bit more and not get caught, and then a little bit more, and then sooner or later, the feds come in and they've been listening.
An attitude that is buttressed by actual policies and statutes.
Yes, yes. The loose laws, weak enforcement, and even the idea that we have more governments than any other state. So there's more opportunity for people to maybe build themselves up into higher level all along, and provide more opportunities for. And
we've seen campaign rules, contributions, Monica.
I mean, years ago at the Tribune, I was investigating a high up executive in CPS Food. She was caught taking bribes from someone who was bidding for the contract. And when the IG investigated and said, "Why did you do it?" she said, "Everyone else was." And I think that pretty much sums up this culture.
Everyone else was.
Yeah. And it's greed. And the impact of that is like, people, everyday people get cynical. They already have a mistrust of government, and that mistrust grows with every single headline we see about these abuses of power.
It hurts
everybody.
You think you got to have a cloud. You think you got to have somebody to do something. You saw the Burke trial, which we all covered, and then you see Ed Burke come up there, and he's shaking down a Burger King. You know, I mean, come on.
Burger King of all places, right? But how is that? Now, you're going to soon be covering the trial for former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan, who's already been in court trying to argue that unfair press coverage is going to hinder his his chances with a fair jury. Does it seem that he's trying to play it both ways?
Yes.
That he
yes.
is both wanted to be known as the Velvet Hammer, boss with iron fists, and at the same time, oh no, that isn't me in coverage?
Right, and also you and I both know that if a story that was unflattering him to him at some point would come out, he would just act like the press is no big deal or anything. Suddenly it's a big deal, and this has got to be a point of concern for the court. And so he's taken shots at a variety of stories, and I go back and read them, and I think, you know, this is not unusual.
Is this corruption series, though, tied at all to a preview, perhaps, of that trial?
I've been pushing to do this series for like 8 years, you know.
So there we go. I mean, you literally wrote a book on the speaker having to do with corruption. I want to make sure that we have time in about 5 minutes we've got left to focus on you, Mariah, because you likewise have an investigation going, and this looked at the track record of a grocery store operator just opened up a new store in West Garfield Park. That, of course, comes with some financial assists from the city, the goal being to end food deserts, but.
Yes, but is the question. 2 years ago, 2 summers ago, Mayor Lori Lightfoot put pretty much all of their bets in on this company, Yellow Banana, which they own and operate 6 Save-A-Lot stores within Chicago. And they said 38 nationally, so they have experience, you would think. But they're a pretty young company. They were first founded in 2021, and they kind of took forever to even start opening stores, and the city gave them or granted them $13.5 million to reopen and renovate these 6 stores. But the first one, 2 years later, just got opened, and West Garfield Park residents are really excited because someone told me, they were like, we're starving. We need food. Like, they don't care what the quality is, honestly. They would prefer a quality, clean grocer, but...
But is Yellow Banana going to be sticking around, do you think, for a long time, or you found some concerns that maybe don't bring high hopes for its longevity?
Yes. So Lauren Fitzpatrick and I and my colleague, we found that the company is in at least $2 million debt in the 3 years that they've been a company, $1 million in active lawsuits from vendors, which say they have stopped paying them. For some vendors say that they've never been paid at all. They've got city violations, property tax bills, utility bills, pretty much any kind of bill that you can think of. They've kind of been not paying.
Is there an out for the city? Oh, sorry, Monica.
They've closed several stores, too.
They've closed more than several. They've closed 16 stores. And they actually, so they handed back control over to the wholesaler, Save-A-Lot, for the rest of their stores. So they only operate the Chicago stores now.
So is the city protected, $13.5 million?
They have to give back the money if they don't follow through.
If they go bankrupt or if they don't follow through by April, of this coming April, then they have to give back the money, and they will be on the hook for that.
So. I have no doubt you'll be following. Monica, you cover food a lot, so any closers on that? And I also wanted to be sure to ask you about a different food situation, and this is for those skipping the grocery store, wanting to get it from some of Chicago's most famous restaurants. It's the Taste of Chicago.
Taste of Chicago's back for the second year in a row in September, because, hey, thanks, NASCAR, you pushed us into September, but the weather's so much nicer. You're not eating a turkey leg while there's sweat pouring down your face. 40 vendors, 16 food trucks, but guess what? Those tickets are gone. So the tickets, which were kind of a pain in the butt, because it's like, oh, I got 5 left and I'm not even hungry anymore. You pay by credit card or cash, but that means, hey, oh, I forgot my code. Oops, it doesn't work. So the lines are crazy long. There were also really long lines to get in because of security. City said they've streamlined that entrance process, but the tickets aren't back.
But nobody can account for folks being slow in tipping.
Exactly.
Or the internet not getting along. So you're planning to go?
I went to check it out, and you know, it's great, and I'm so glad the weather's nice. Here's my tip. Bring a tray or like the top of a box, and then tell your friend, hey, go get a spot with a blanket. I'm going to go get some food, and then bring it over there. So you're not like sitting on some dirty curb.
Teamwork. I like this plan.
Do they still have liquor?
I like this
plan.
They
do.
Okay, I haven't been to Taste in like 5 years.
We're going to end on that note. Thanks so much to Brandon Pope, to Monica Ang, Mariah Rush, and Ray Long. We will be back to wrap things up, so stick around.
Tonight's presentation of Chicago Tonight, Week in Review, is made possible in part by Ann and Rich Carr. BNSF Railway, Francine and Dr. Anthony Brown, and the Mullenhauer Progressive Philanthropic Fund in honor of Ida Mullenhauer, supporting quality journalism. Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
That is our show for this Friday night. Don't forget, you can get Chicago Tonight and The Week in Review streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and our website. Now, for The Week in Review, I'm Amanda Vinicky. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a great night. So, some folks winged at the taste. It's Printer's Row. Also, the first Bears game in the big debut.
To the Titans. New rookie quarterback, Caleb Williams. Generational.
All right, what are you thinking here?
What do you mean
generational?
Super Bowl.
He's good. Look, I think the hype is way too heavy right now. Let's pump the brakes. Eight or nine wins. I will say that, though.
Eight or nine wins.
What about Packers? We're going to beat the Packers this year?
That's a tough one. There's a chance. There's always a chance. I think they have a better shot than usual.
What about this first game?
It's going to be a tough one. The Titans, everyone's assuming we're going to beat them. I think it's going to be a close one. I think the Titans actually might pull off the upset.
Okay.
We will see what happens, though.
The sweat is not going to be there.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.